Well, welcome to presentation. So a father and daughter were going fishing. They got out to the dock, and the dad grabs his pole, and he reaches into a little bag, and he pulls out a worm. And says, "Jenny, I'm going to put a worm on my hook."
"A worm? Dad! Who would want to eat a worm? What did the worm do? Doesn't God love worms?"
Poor Dad, the questions they get asked. His father was sort of not sure what to do, so he said, "Okay, I'll stick this on my hook." So the father put it on his hook, and Jenny held up her little hook.
She said, "Dad, look at this hook. See how shiny it is. If I was a fish, I would bite it."
"Okay, yeah. You go ahead and try." So Jenny casts her reel off this side of the dock, and her dad casts off the other side. Pretty soon her dad catches a fish. And Jenny's over here still fishing, looking over her shoulder. And pretty soon her dad puts a worm on and he catches another fish. And this happens a few more times. And finally, Jenny goes back, "Dad, it's not fair." He says, what's wrong, Jenny?" "You got the lucky pull." Dad says, "Jenny, what do you think fish like to eat?" "Yes, Jenny, worms.
But Dad, this hook looks so shiny."
"But do you want to catch fish?"
"Yeah."
What is the purpose of a presentation? What do we put worms on hooks to catch fish? Why do stores arrange things so that they're attractive when you walk in the door? Why isn't it just a mess, stuff all over the floor? What are they trying to do? A store wants to what something?
Sell.
They want to sell something. What are you as a teacher trying to sell when you walk into your classroom? It's not worms, in case you're wondering. What are you trying to sell?
Wisdom.
Knowledge. What are the three steps to making a good presentation? My goal is going to be to answer that question. Our goal is to identify and discuss the three steps for catching students. The three steps are the bait, or your introduction. The purpose of your introduction is to get their attention. Imagine a car lot with all those shiny cars. Right? Why do they paint cars all kinds of nice colors? They could use flat paint, and they could all be black. They want to get your attention. The bite, or the explanation. This portion of a presentation is to keep their attention. You get a hold of it, you've got to keep it. It's kind of like when you go pull into a car lot because you saw that shiny car and you're taking it for a test drive. That salesman is keeping your attention. The catch, or the application portion of a presentation, is where you're guiding their attention. It's kind of like once you've purchased that car and you're driving out of the parking lot. You're doing something with it. It's not just a shiny thing that you took for a test drive. It's yours now, and you're using it. My takeaway for today is that the teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn. For a criminal to get a reduced sentence, he must own his crime. Teaching is not a crime. But you need to own it. You need to make it yours. A quote by a man named Patrick White I forget what I was taught. I only remember what I learned. I'm going to make a very strong statement here, and then I will qualify it. But I do want you to think about it. If they aren't learning, you aren't teaching. Now, to teach, the teacher must cause the student to learn. That is your job. If it's not happening, you are the one who's responsible. The teacher's responsible because he controls the style, the subject being talked about, and the speaker. Therefore, the teacher has not only the ability, but also the responsibility to change the subject, improve the style, and inspire the speaker to equip the student. Now, I said that if they aren't learning, you aren't teaching. I don't want you to go to school and feel guilty if you teach 5 + 2 = 7, and the next day your students are writing 8. 3 steps forward and 2 steps backward is the norm. A-plus students are rare. Jesus himself had a Judas in his classroom. Now, I don't want you coming back here next year and saying, "Teacher Jonah, I had a room full of Judases. They all failed." You didn't get it, if that is what happens. I don't want you feeling guilty. You would agree with me that making the statement that paper... These things are childproof. Okay, come on now. Burns, right? Brian, would you be willing to hold this piece of paper while I put the flame up to it?
Yeah, but not long after.
No, I mean keep holding it.
Keep holding it, probably not.
No. It's because we think that paper burns 100% of the time, right? We say that's kind of a law, right? So that is a law just as much as if you aren't teaching, I mean, if they aren't learning, you aren't teaching. Brian, I want to build some trust.
Okay.
If I tell you that this isn't going to hurt, will you believe me?
Yeah, I'll bite. Yeah, sure.
That'll work. All right. Paper burns 100% of the time, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Brian, please hold that up by the top. And hold it high enough so everybody can see. And there we go. That is your exceptional student. Let's give Brian a hand because that was very great. Good job. To teach, the teacher must not only present new concepts and processes, but also change the way students think and the way they respond to life. To teach is to improve the life of the one being taught. To teach is to cause the student to recreate in their own understanding a new idea or truth. To teach is to cause the student to apply knowledge and then apply it some more. How do we get a student to apply a concept? First, we have to get their attention. How do we do that? The bait. Also called the introduction. We're going to use the story of Jesus and the woman at the well as our model for this topic. I love that story. I told you, those of you who were here the first day, that I will do not apologize for telling you to teach like Jesus did. This story is extremely powerful because of the tools Jesus used in teaching the woman at the well. He told her some extremely difficult things, and he changed her life in a very short period of time. But to do that, he had to get her attention. Must the bait or introduction must appeal to your group? And this comes, you're going to have to get to know your students to be able to do this. Jesus knew the Samaritans, and he knew this woman, of course. Sell yourself. This lady came along walking there with her pitcher. Why was she going to a well? Why do people go to wells? Because they are thirsty. And Jesus says, give me to drink. He got her attention. Dressed for success. Ladies, if you're teaching lower grades, wear bright colors. Those young children just love when you're wearing something shiny or bright or whatever. It helps you to appeal to them. Upper grade teachers, your students will prefer that you look like a teacher. Mid-tones, darker tones, will actually help you look like an authority figure, which you are, to these people, and will actually help them believe what you say. I am not joking. There's science behind this. Think about it. Showing up in jeans and a t-shirt is probably not the greatest presentation of yourself as a teacher. Use active posture. Stand or kneel. If you do use a chair, some of you will probably, you need to put an odometer on it and try to get several miles on that thing. Don't be a stationary object in the front of your classroom. Be moving around, and those children will be wondering, wow, you know. They'll be watching and wishing that they had rolling chairs too. If you prefer the chair method, put some miles on it every day. Make eye contact with your students. Joel talked a little bit about this when singing. Comfortable eye contact is approximately 2 seconds per person. If it is held longer than that, typically the person you are looking at begins to feel singled out and rather nervous. And occasionally you will see redness creeping up from their... I am very sorry for picking on you. This is perfectly normal. Don't do that to your children. They don't want to get embarrassed. I'm very sorry for doing that. That's enlarged for texture and everything. Gesture. Point. And when you do this, there's something... I don't know that it's just Anabaptist people, but I've noticed some people, when they gesture... They seem to have elbows that are attached to their sides, and so their gestures are very short-armed, all right? It's actually, it looks stiff. It is stiff to do that. Relax. Let your arms extend. That's what's called welcoming body language. And smile. I don't know if any of you have been told not to smile before Thanksgiving. I'm going to tell you to smile the first day of school. Make that be the first thing that your children see when they come in the classroom. It's a smiling teacher. Because if they get the concept that you want to be there, they'll probably want to be there too. And now part of this is getting you all to practice. And I told you all I pick on the back row. So we're going to have the back row stand to their feet and just smile at everybody. Turn around and watch them. They're really good at this. These are some good smilers. Very good. They may sit back down. Let's give them a round. Invite. I already said use welcoming body language. This would be something you should not do in your classroom, even if your students are in trouble. Don't do that. An extended arm. Trevin, do you really think that was a good idea? Is much better than Trevin. Do you think that was it? My body language is telling him that I think it was a bad idea. Versus giving him an opportunity to say, well, actually, that wasn't what I meant, or something, which is what he might have felt. So, once again, you're supposed to practice, right? So the second row, we're going to have you all stand, smile, and extend your right arm. Just a nice welcoming gesture. So the second row, there we go. Good job! Reassure your students. I hope you felt reassured after I pinned you on the spot for a little bit. Start at their level of their ability level. The Bible says a smoking flax will he not quench, so don't do that to your students. If they're trying to come along with you, bring them along gently. Don't make them feel singled out or humiliated, but do include them. That's how they learn. So front row, you're up now. You all will stand, turn around, extend your right arms, and smile big. Very good. Good job. sell your subject. Jesus started with water. This lady had come for water. Stir curiosity. Jesus did not even have a jug. She said, you don't even have any. The well's deep. You don't have anything to get it. Has the board attracted any of your attention? Good. All right. Let's start here. A woman without her man is nothing. That needs some punctuation, doesn't it? Anyone want to venture a spot where we should place a semicolon in there? Because after woman. All right. Spoken by a woman, let me tell you. A woman without her man is nothing. Okay, if it was one of the guys, it would come after man. Right? You can figure that out. Use your board. So my friend Rico from the Philippines is building a house. And they're going to be planting poos in the ground. So the house will be up off the ground so that when the typhoons come and the floods are high, the water won't come into his house. And he's going to be planting the poos 8 feet away from each other, and so his house will be 24 feet long and 16 feet wide. How many posts does Rico need? Draw little circles, and there you go. Very simple. Use objects without explaining them. I hope some of y'all are wondering what the orange is about. Derek, what is an orange about? Oh, he almost caught it. Sorry, it was a horrible throw, wasn't it?
That was a good
throw. What does that orange have to do with something on the board? Anybody know? Yes?
Let's eat grandma.
That actually wasn't, though, but we'll get there after a moment. Does this have anything to do with an orange? Yes. You can use an orange to teach surface area of a sphere. If you chop the orange in half and place half of it on a piece of paper and draw a circle around it and cut four pieces of paper that exact size, that will cover the outside of an orange. Wonderful. Use stories without ending them. So there was this young couple on the mission field who spent some time together and decided that they really liked each other and they wanted to spend the rest of their lives together. They wanted to get married, but during this period of time, similar to what is happening in Bangladesh right now, the government began to collapse. And it was announced that all government offices are going to close on this certain day of the month, which was very soon. And for them to be able to get married legally, they had to go to multiple different offices in the capital city of this third world country. And so they made plans and took off on the bus to the capital city and went to the first place, got their papers signed, and they went to the second place, and they walk in, and this gentleman's behind the desk. And they said, yes, we're here to get a marriage license. You know, this is the second step. We got one more step to go all the way across town, so, you know, can we get our paperwork? Ah, oh, you're getting married? Ah, happy. Oh, un momento. And he walks out the back door. And paperwork. Boss, we need to go. And they're waiting. And waiting, and waiting. And after a while, they hear this commotion in the back, and he comes stumbling up there, and he's got this puppy. He said, my doggy have a puppy. If you get married, you need a puppy because your wife be too sad to be at home alone. So I give you the puppy. He's a puppy. And they're like, where's the paperwork? Can we please? So the guy's there holding this puppy, and signing the paperwork, and they take off, and they run out the door and get on the first bus they can find, and of course, with upheavals and whatever, there's traffic jams, and they can barely make it across town, and it's getting close to closing time for the government offices. This is the last day for who knows how long, and they get almost there, and the bus is stuck in traffic, and the young man is like, hey, let's hoof it, and so they jump off of the bus, and they're running through, shouldering their way through people and bikes and pigs and chickens and everything else, and they're carrying this puppy the whole time. And they come around the corner of the street where they can see that last government office, and here they see the people streaming out, the workers. And they can see the last lady step out of that office and put her key in the door. And so use pictures without explaining them. Does anybody know what this picture is? Remember my friend Rico? Use misquotes. Students love to connect their teachers. When their teacher makes a mistake, they like to connect them. For example, if Heidi is baking cookies and she puts in, you know, 2 cups of flour and 2 cups of salt and, you know, 1 pound of butter and so on. And students just love to connect you when you make a mistake like...
Correct!
Thank you! You'll have students who will be there at the class table and you're drooning on about, indirect objects, and someone is staring out the window and you say something about, my three-legged bicycle, and they love to catch you, and it's not like that! Use unpredictability, and use this carefully, but every now and then, heads down, thumbs up, no peeking allowed. Seriously, right now, heads down, thumbs up. What is the capital of Delaware?
Dover.
Wisconsin.
Madison.
Bangladesh.
Dhaka.
Alberta.
Edmonton.
Canada.
Ottawa.
Russia.
Moscow.
Heads up,
coming
up.
Hey.
Oh, you're not some food. Sorry. Okay. Don't do that too often, but every now and then, it's okay. Use sizzle. This was probably something I overdo, so forgive me. But enthusiasm can cover a multitude of sins. And that being said, I need a volunteer from the third row. One of you ladies, please. Very brave person. Thank you. You can come on. Yes, you. All right. We have here a bottle of normal Mountain Dew, and we have a bottle of normal raisins. Okay, go ahead and take some raisins in your hand. And be brave. Once again, this involves trust, right? You know that I'm not going to hurt. Go ahead and drop the raisins in the Mountain Dew. Thank you. You may go back and sit down. And that is very distracting, I know, but it is what we call sizzle. You can use this in devotions. You can use it in some of your classes. And you can have your students talk about it and so on. And so, I'm going to have you all recite the takeaway for today. The teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn. All together, the teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn. Build need. Jesus said, I've got living water. And he said this to a lady who was thirsty. Young ladies, when you're teaching children about not using their fingers to do their math problems, have them imagine if they're carrying 2 bags of groceries and someone asks them what 5 plus 7 is. What are you going to do? Or tell them about the man who was in the furniture shop and using the table saw and cut all the fingers off of one hand. He could only count up to 6 after that. Describe the need. So 1 year we had a school cleaning, and immediately after shampooing the rugs, we carried our nice metal desks in and set them around in the classroom. And so then what happened? They rusted. This is why we study science. Okay. Direct students to watch or listen for things. For example, last night I took a little walk under the stars and was able to see 2 meteors. It was wonderful. Enjoyed it. We're getting close to the Perseid meteor showers, which will peak, I believe, August 11th or 12th. And so if the evening of August the 12th, if it's a clear night, go out and look toward the east, and you should see some very good meteors. Or, during the next few topics, try to count the smiles that the speakers make. It can be kind of fun. Sell your introduction. This should be something that you do very quickly. And my introduction is our takeaway. And so, third row ladies, you get to stand up, smile, extend your arms, and say the takeaway. You can too, as well.
The teacher
is responsible to cause the student to learn.
You may be seated. Good job. Memorize the first few things you're going to say to your students. Most of the time, it's going to be a review question. For example, as your students are coming up to the class table for math, you might say, how many cups are in a pint? Close. Two. He's got the big ones. He's not a half pint, let me tell you. Monitor student focus. Keep an eye on where people are looking in your classroom. And something good with that is occasionally do something a little bit unpredictable at the class table to create what's called FOMO. Has anyone heard of FOMO before? Yes. You want that in your at class time. You want them to be scared that if they look out the window, they're going to miss something good. Okay? Fear of missing out. Make it personal. If you're using an example in English class and you say, Joelle was playing softball and she hit a home run. Not a cheat. Hit home? What did she hit? Right. So we've Joelle's bought into this problem because we used her name. One thing, one caution with that, never do anything, once again, that will humiliate them. You know, it's just, they'd like to be included, but don't offend in doing that. Must be presented until it is bitten. When Jesus was talking with the woman at the well, she said, who do you think you are? Do you think you're better than Jacob? And Jesus said, the living water that I'm going to give you. He didn't let himself get derailed. She wanted to get off the subject. Jesus stayed right on it. Be aware that there are basically four types of learners. There are children who want to do something. They're the ones who, when they come up to the class table and you're talking, they're staring somewhere else. But as soon as you say you may go up to the board, bam, they're with you. There are those who want to talk. You come up to the class table and you ask questions and they can just hardly wait to answer. And they'll talk to you all day. There are those who just want to read the text. When they come up to the class table, they've already read the lesson, they already know what's going on, and they're bored. But they want to read. I love that. And there are those who want to see something. They want to watch something happen. They're visually stimulated. Use lecture. For example, you can say a polygon is any shape that we can make with straight sides, right? That's straight up lecture. It works for some people. Use discussion and try to include people in this. For example, how many of you like chocolate? Almost unanimous. Very good. And you bought in. I've got your attention because we involved you. Use visual aids. Many of you will be using curriculum that has some kind of chart on the wall that you'll be using and things like that. Don't cut those out. They're very useful. They are needed. Use the student's five senses. One thing that we as teachers have a tendency to do is to use only two, eyes and ears. Those are only two pathways into a person's mind. People have five senses. I need two gentlemen and two ladies to volunteer, please. Thank you. Come on up. And two gentlemen. Thank you. Come on up. Sorry, Brent, you were just a second too late. And just stand up in the front here. And I will give each of you a napkin. Just step up beside them, please. Thank you. Now, when God was making fruits, he created the banana specifically for the sake of teachers who needed to get fractions across to their students. Right, this is one what banana?
Whole.
All right, and then each of these pieces is one half. Okay, hold your nose out. All right, Shane is now holding one
fourth.
Very good. And go ahead and peel those. And do you all know how to divide a banana into thirds? Go ahead and do that. As soon as one of you has one, just go ahead and hold it up. Can you divide it into thirds?
Yeah.
Thank you, Sandra. Go ahead and hold up one piece. That piece is one what of that banana?
12.
112. Thank you. And you may eat that piece.
Like right now?
Yeah, right now. That's right.
People.
Yeah. You're not allergic to bananas, right?
No.
Go ahead. Very few people are. So very good. All right. How much of the banana is left? That was really rough. What was that? 11 twelfths. Very good. Shane, would you eat a piece now? Now how much is left?
5/6.
5/6. Thank you for reducing that fraction. Now each of you eat a piece.
Me too?
Yep. Now how much is left?
One half.
One half. Somebody was paying close attention. All right. Now, Whitney and Thane, each of you eat one piece. How much is left?
One quarter. Third.
One third. Very good. All right. And now, everybody but Shane eat another piece. And how much is left?
One twelfth.
Good job, Shane. You may eat that final piece. Fractions taste like bananas. All right, you all may be seated again. Good job. Thank you for participating. We engaged, I would say, all five of their senses, right? Sight, sound, taste, smell, and feeling. That a banana has a feeling that goes along with it, and so on. The bite, the explanation. Jesus revealed that what he was really talking about was the spiritual thing. Last night when I was reading this story again, I was impressed when Jesus, as he was talking about this living water, and he finally gets to the point, he says, they that worship God. This is what we're really talking about, worship. With students, we have that introduction, we get their attention, and then we get to the meat of what's really happening. It must tie to as many known facts as possible. And I'll say this again, use review to start most of your lessons, starting with what they already know. Derek is going to go over this. No, Derek did go over this in preparation, sorry. And Derek's main point in preparation was that the three most important things for a teacher are?
Preparation.
See, that's review right there. Using known facts is extremely important. So if all Quitchells are Shipes, and some Shipes are Zortes, are some Zortes Quitchells? You're totally lost. Let's try this again. If all Jerseys are cows, and some cows are Holsteins, are some Holsteins Jerseys?
No.
No. So all that happened, it was exact same problem. But I gave you known facts, and you had it like that. So your students, if your students are giving you that deer in the headlights look, you probably are is talking about Quitchells and Zortes to them. Don't do that, all right? Use the student. I'll say that again. Use their name in what you're talking about. Use the student's home life. Find out about their animals. You can talk about their dog or their, if they like bikes or drones or whatever. Chores that they do at home. You could say, if Sarah has to do 1/4 of 500 dishes, and her brother needs to finish, how many dishes does Sarah have to wash? We have a lady named Sarah in school. Use the board. I need a volunteer again. Somebody who already volunteered that didn't get to come up here. Please, come on up. We'll have you write an abbreviated form of our takeaway. Just two words. Cause learning. Just grab any of those markers and write cause learning on the board. Anywhere there is fine. Cause learning. That is your job this year. Very good. Thank you. You may be seated. Use pictures with simple explanations. So, blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. Psalm 1 in stick figures. All right. You can do that in memory. Help your students remember things. Use objects with an explanation. So, occasionally, I'll take an orange when I'm talking to my students about the moon. Because the outside of an orange has pits in it, right? I could tell them that's how the moon is. It has a bunch of pits. We call them craters because it's been hit by many meteors. Use figurative speech. If you talk to a child about an animal or something that they have never seen, they ask you, what is it
like?
You say, it is like a chicken, except that it has a great big nose and it's much, much bigger. And it's gray and it has really long ears. That wasn't the greatest thing for an elephant. But anyway, use examples that are realistic for your students so that they connect what they're learning to real life. You might say, Kim is making candles and she's going to sell each of them for $10 and she makes 50 of them. How much money does she get? Kim is very interested in this because she likes making money. Maybe she likes candles too. Must be reeled in. When a student learns something, it may be very valuable. A friend of mine gave his son a screwdriver. And his son was very thrilled as a screwdriver. And he took it out to the shop and commenced to disassemble the lawnmower. He needed to know what to do with that thing. You ladies, you know, if you give a child a seam ripper, that might be bad news for your wardrobe, right? So we'll go ahead and use this example for that. Where do we need commas in here? So we went fish. I went fishing with worms. How many people went fishing? Where should we put commas in? Anybody?
One after Alan, one after Joe.
One after Alan, one after Joe? Where else?
After John and Peachy.
After John and Peachy. Where else?
Billy Joe, Jim.
After Billy Joe, Jim. After Bob. Where else? Don't make me wait too long here.
Rose.
After Rose.
Bing, Laura, John, Billy.
Okay.
If you so wish.
If I so wish. Thank you. Well, that was excellent. And this is what students will do when you start teaching them about commas. They will put commas everywhere. And you have to tell them, I was born in Southwest Missouri, and that is one person. And John Smooker, the guy talking early in the mornings here, his wife's name is Laura, and we're at, you know, Anabaptist people, so she is John Miller. And Jonathan Miller's wife is named Rose, and so she's being Rose. And you were right. It's John Allen and Peachy Joe. That's all the way. Demonstrate the process. There's a math problem that you're teaching them, long division or whatever. Practice it on the board. Show them what to do, how to do it, and tell them why. Lead your students. Have problems for them to attempt or discuss. For example, why can the earth not be flat? Involve your students. We have this little sentence up here. I use this sentence to teach direct objects. I'm going to have you three boys step up here. Please. All right, for the sake of this lesson, we're going to pretend that you're Tom, you are Hit, and you are Dan. Tom, please hit Dan. I know this is school, but I just told you to hit Dan, so please hit Dan. Yes. All right, now Dan knows what it's like to be a direct object. He receives the action of the verb. Let's give him a hand. Thank you, gentlemen. Good job. You may be seated. Ask questions. Questioning is one of the biggest parts of teaching. For example, if we can be disgusted if we don't like something, if we really like something, are we gusted? All right? Master the irreducible minimum. Our takeaway for today is cause learning. I can't make it any shorter than that. That is what you are supposed to do this year. I know it's longer on your handout, but that's the irreducible minimum. Give a takeaway to your students. Tell them, this is what you need to know. This lesson about nouns, all you have to remember is that nouns name. Can you say that with me? Nouns, name. Do you think you can remember that? Yeah, okay, very good. Yeah, you may go back to your desk and get to work. Must be netted. When a fish, you get that big fish up close. We've got to get it in a net. This is the moment when that student grasps the concept.
Did someone figure out what 75% of 32 is? Can you prove to me that you know that? 24. Very good. So you've done. You've grasped the concept. You got a hold of it.
Why would I want you to know that? Because you need to know that for real life. Right? We teach to satisfy the student's need. We teach until the lights come on, or the student is struck with the idea. And we teach until they are working the concept. The catch, or application. The Bible says that all scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be perfect, thoroughly furnished to all good works. That word furnished, we could use it as equipped. We are equipping people to go forth and be useful in God's kingdom. That's what I'm trying to do right now. I want to equip you to equip other people to equip other people so that God's kingdom won't die out. This is bigger than Mountain Dew bottles and bananas, but we use them to get there. Those are tools. Jesus inspired change in that lady. She was so excited about what she learned, about the fact that that spiritual water was worship and that this was the Christ. She ran away from that well so fast, the dust was flying behind her, and she didn't even remember that she had left her water pot back at the well. And the disciples were thinking, what's that lady in a hurry for? Must be practiced. The New Testament is balanced almost perfectly 50-50 with doctrine and practical applications. Your teaching should balance approximately the same. About half of what happens in your classroom should be the students actually practicing what you've taught them. Working equals learning. Who is responsible to make sure that happens? Our takeaway for today, the teacher is responsible to cause the students to learn. It's your responsibility to make them work, because if they are working, they're learning. Repetition equals learning. What was the takeaway? The
teacher is responsible to cause the students to learn.
About 8 repetitions is typically what it takes for something to sink in. We're getting close to that with that takeaway. Applying equals learning. That poem, Equipment, is about applying what you know. And the more realistic the application is, the better. And this comes back to connecting with your students and their lives. I challenge you to know your students well enough to give them problems that sound real to them in their own experience. Not yours, theirs. And that means studying students. And remember that the more your application supplies their needs, the better. Because it's your job to improve their life. Must be corrected. Jesus corrected the woman at the well. He said, go get your husband. And she said, oh, I don't have one. And Jesus said, that's right. How many of you are just thrilled that you're going to get to check papers? Really? God bless you, ma'am. I think this might be the first, maybe the second time that someone actually raised their hand in there. But I have learned to love checking, partly because I think of it as correcting instead of checking. Your students need that. Give constructive criticism charitably. That's what Jesus did to that lady. That's why she could take it. He said some very hard things to her. Allow your students to struggle. There was a man whose wife had a problem spending too much money. Mine doesn't, by the way.
just in case you were wondering. And she would just go shopping, spend it, credit cards all maxed out and everything. And so they had this whiteboard on the fridge, and he would occasionally write things to her when he was leaving for work in the morning. And one morning he wrote this. And when he came home that night, here was the car out front, full to the top of thrift store corruption. I mean, the children could barely even get out. They're trying to crawl underneath all these boxes and clothes and everything. He said, "Honey, didn't you see what I wrote on the whiteboard this morning?" She said, "Yes, I just added to it." Youth challenge. Jesus did this at times. He would challenge his disciples. Joshua did it. He said, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Elijah did it on Mount Carmel, and so I'm going to do it here. I don't want you to do this if you don't mean it. Right? I don't believe a challenge should be that light. But if you purpose in your heart that you're willing to take the responsibility on yourself to cause your students to learn this year, you can stand. God bless you. I hope you can keep that. You may be seated. It must be reviewed. So let's repeat that takeaway. The
teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn.
Use jingles for distance, rate, and time. If you have the distance, divide. Things like that. Add some extra facts. We're teaching a lesson about the age of the Anabaptist. Does anyone know how old Felix Mons, Conrad Grebel, and George Lorock were? The oldest one was 27 years old. When you tell your students that, they weren't old geezers with long beards. No, these were young guys who were on fire for God. Drill the hard parts. Derek is going to do this. He's going to warn you about pitfalls. Teaching school has hard parts, and we want you to know about those. Review the directions. Ask your students, "Do you understand?" And sometimes they'll nod their heads, even when they don't. Repeat the takeaway. Jesus, when she came to him, she said, "We're looking for the Messiah." And Jesus said, "I am he." And she went back into town and said, "He is the Christ." She knew it. So you may repeat the takeaway one more time.
The teacher is responsible to cause the students to learn.
Disclaimer. Not every day should feel like this session. Your students would be quite overstimulated and probably nervous wrecks, and so would you. However, we do hope you have learned some valuable techniques that can help you catch your students throughout this term. Let's do the review at the end of your handout. The bait is also called the
introduction.
And the purpose is to the bite, also called the
explanation.
The purpose is to the catch, also called the
application.
And the purpose is to and the takeaway, the
teacher is responsible to cause the students to learn.
Thank you, and God bless you.